Welcome to the Inside the Boards Study Smarter series, dedicated to helping you learn to think like a question writer so you can study smarter, not harder, and succeed on your exam.
All right, welcome to the Inside the Boards Study Smarter podcast. I am Patrick Beeman, your host. Today we are launching our Internal Medicine Step 2 Study Smarter series. This is just going to be a handful of episodes because we'll be moving into our Step 1 Study Smarter series here at the end of March, early April. We just got back from AMSA, had a great time meeting some students there. Check out our main podcast channel for interviews and some advice we got from students and other educators in the space that we recorded live at AMSA's convention. As well, just a reminder, our all audio QBank Step 1 is powered by Exam Circle and Lecturio, and Step 2 is powered by Online MedEd. The beta iOS app is going to come out any day now. So if you are already a subscriber to the All Audio QBank, keep watch for an email from us on the changes that will be required to access the content. I know I've been saying this app's coming out like, you know, this month, next month for quite a while, but it's actually being reviewed by Apple now, and we've just had to go back and make some changes and tweaks here or there before it's actually approved and released. But any day now, for those of you who want to get access to early pricing on the All Audio QBank, we do have a way of delivering that content via Podbean. So if you go to insidetheboards.podbean.com or click the link in the show notes, you can sign up, get the early access pricing, and then you'll have access to the content on the iOS beta app as well as our cross-platform full app, which, you know, I hesitate to say it, but should be out for a May release. We're at least on track for that. And just a reminder, we have the ITB main podcast as well as the Medical Mnemonist, spelled like mnemonics, which is focused on accelerated learning techniques and study hacks. That podcast is live now. We are going to be launching two other additional podcasts, one for physiology and then an expanded version of Step 2 Secrets. So go to insidetheboards.com, sign up for our email list to be notified when we release that content. It's going to be exclusively in our app, and it's high yield, MedEd for free, like you've come to expect from us. As always, we thank you for listening. Let's dive right into today's content.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Step 2 Study Smarter series. My name is Stuart Bryant. I am one of the hosts here at Inside the Boards, and I am joined today with Dr. Patrick Beeman, our co-founder and CEO of Inside the Boards, here today.
Actually, I'm taking the title Chief Question Officer because it sounds like cooler and closer to what I do.
Awesome. Maybe I'll be like a chief podcast officer. I don't know. We'll see how figure this out.
Yeah.
But yeah, today we're here to talk to you guys about Step 2 questions. Really, this will be very dedicated kind of content, not a whole lot of anecdotal material, but just sort of running through questions. And I think we're going to really focus today on cardiology, right, Patrick?
That's true. And just a reminder, our All Audio QBank, go to insidetheboards.com. These questions are from our friends at Online MedEd, who power our Step 2 version of the All Audio QBank. So if you like this type of content, you can get straight up questions in our All Audio QBank powered by Online MedEd. So that's my only plug.
Awesome.
All right, let's start. I'll read this one. A 56-year-old male presents with sudden onset crushing substernal chest pain. Gotta love chief complaints like that. It is present at rest and worse with exertion. He says he's never felt the pain before. He's pale, cool, and diaphoretic. Past medical history is positive for hypertension and cigarette smoking. His vitals show a blood pressure of 110 over 70, a heart rate of 120, respirations are 22, and his O2 sats are 95% on room air. He's clutching his chest and is in obvious distress. His physical exam's otherwise normal. Sublingual nitroglycerin was administered, as was aspirin, in the field. A 12-lead EKG demonstrates no ST segment changes, but there is a new left bundle branch block. What is the best next step in the management of this patient? Is it A, percutaneous coronary intervention, B, a coronary artery bypass graft, C, CT angiography, or D, a serum troponin level?
This is tough. So, Patrick, what's your differential for crushing substernal chest pain? And I'll give you mine.
Sure. So an MI sits at the top of the list, and then basically things in the mediastinum or chest. If somebody has an atypical presentation, we'll leave that off for now. But what about like an aortic dissection or I guess you could have like a pulmonary embolus. What else? Cardiac tamponade. Let's hear yours. I'm an OBGYN. Preeclampsia?
Yeah.
No.
Ooh. Not a bad choice. So my thoughts are exactly as you said. I'm thinking about an MI, an MI, and an MI. And then I'm thinking, okay, what else could be going on? Cardiac, I think about tamponade. I think about aortic dissection. You threw up PE also. I really like PE. Other things, mediastinal. I think about like an esophageal rupture.
Ooh, like Borjov syndrome?
Borjov syndrome, yeah. And then I think there's one more that I'm leaving out here because I think I have six that I think about, but we've got five. So I think we've really hit the major ones, don't you think?
Yeah.
Anything else substernal? I guess GERD, you can have a chest pain.
Sure.
That's going to go in your differential too. Of course, that's not going to be something that's going to kill you, right?
Right. And less described, especially on boards, is crushing substernal chest pain. I feel like that descriptor is kind of a dead ringer on the exams for an MI.
Exactly. So one thing I'm leaving off, but oh well, it'll come to me eventually. So this guy's
aortic aneurysm.
Crushing chest pain. Yeah, I guess it's lower. It's lower on my list, but it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we'll stick with MI as the five in the differential, top five in the differential. For crushing substernal chest pain on USMLE step two or like an IM shelf.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
For sure.
Cool.
So this guy's got that kind of pain. He's already gotten nitro. He's already gotten aspirin. He's got an EKG that says there's no ST segment changes, but there's a left bundle branch block.
It's one of those where you're like, oh, no ST segment changes. Oh man, this guy probably doesn't have an MI. And now I'm all confused.
Yeah, but he's got a bundle branch block. Do I know what to make of that or not?
Yeah. Well, actually, you do, because a new bundle branch block counts as an ST segment elevation or STEMI.
Exactly. So if we know that the patient is having crushing chest pain, that it's not relieved with nitroglycerin and aspirin and has a new bundle branch block, what are we going to do? We're going to go to the cath lab, right?
Yep.
First things first. So my answer here is going to be go to the cath lab, get PCI, hopefully save some heart, right?
Oh, dude, we forgot now, angina.
Oh, yeah, that's the sixth one. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, to continue with our discussion of MI.
There it is. Oh, I knew it was going to come up, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, angina aside, would have been relieved if we had given nitroglycerin, so that kind of runs off. We're going to go to the cath lab. We're going to open up their coronary vessels and hopefully get some perfusion and help save their heart, right?
Yep.
Here, our other options include doing a CABG. I don't think anyone's going to pick that one, honestly. If you were to say, oh, they've got some chest pain, let's go to surgery and do a bypass. I think you're going to need some more information for that, right? You're going to need like angiography. You're going to want to know how bad the vessels are. And you're going to want to be sure that they are a patient who's going to be fixed by having angina or having a CABG done, right?
Yeah.
So we're not just going to run off to surgery. A CT angiography. This is never the right answer, guys.
Oh, yeah?
So a CT angio is not ready for prime time, I think. It's one of these, if you see it, don't pick it. If there's any other kind of way to interrogate the coronary arteries, like you're going to use that over CT angiography. In the future, this might become a right answer for looking at coronary vessels, but right now, avoid it like the plague. And honestly, I think it would be rare to even see it as an answer choice outside of here. And then our other choice here is serum troponin level. This is probably the
most attractive distractor.
Yeah, okay. Right. I mean, you know, chances are this is going to, in real life, by the time you see this patient and they've done the EKG, they've probably already drawn blood for this. So that it would kind of defeat the point. But for your test, you already have proof that they're having an MI based on a new left bundle branch block, right?
Yeah.
If you have the EKG findings that are diagnostic of an ST elevated or of a myocardial infarction, you don't need troponin to characterize to be sure. You have to think about your pretest probability here.
Which is high.
If you see this guy and you're 95% sure they're having an MI and you're 5% sure they could be having like a dissection or a PE or something, what is a troponin going to give you once you know they have a new left bundle branch block? You know, even if it's a likelihood ratio increase of, say, it doubles your chances. So you're 95% sure and now you're like, what, 97% sure?
Yeah.
Like, how useful is that for you guys?
Right.
So what you're going to want to do is, at this point, we know he has risk factors. We know he has chest pain. We know he has a new left bundle branch block. Let's go ahead and get this guy some treatment. And this comes into like the whole, you know, door to cath time, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think 90 minutes is the rule right now, or the goal. Some ERs are trying to do faster than that. Like, I've heard ERs have a door to cath of like 30 minutes, actually.
And that's obviously the sooner the better. But for testing purposes, you're looking for a patient who presents within 3 hours. Oh, sorry, I interrupted you. What were you saying? What else for PCI?
So we were talking about how fast you want to get to the cath lab. The rule is 90 minutes. It's not like a stroke where, you know, you have, you know, once they were last seen normal, that's when the clock starts ticking. It's more about when they get to the ED. So that the goal is 90 minutes. And I think that's, in general, EDs are trying to do that even faster than that, actually. Fun fact with this patient, a classic sign is a patient clutching the chest in acute distress with ill vital signs and having substernal chest pain, right?
Yep.
That's called Levine sign. Maybe you'll see it.
And importantly, I remember learning in medical school that if somebody has a closed fist and they're doing that versus an open hand, the closed fist is more likely to be cardiac pain.
Interesting.
In nature.
I would love to see the study that found that.
Yeah, it could just be anecdotal from the cardiologist's experience, but still, perhaps a useful sign if you walk into an ER room and somebody's sitting there with a closed fist against their chest instead of an open hand. I don't know, though. I don't think that'll be on the test.
Yeah, there are enough heart attacks where we could study this stuff if we wanted.
True.
All right. How we feel about that?
I think that's pretty good. Just to mention the cabbage, though, is it still true that you can say, like, essentially that if you have three vessel disease, left main coronary artery disease, or like lesions identified on angiography that are not amenable to PCI, that you still do PCI first as an attempt for that lesion, the one thought to be responsible for the STEMI, but then the patient could get a CABG afterwards?
Yeah, I think the real deal, so definitely three vessel disease, definitely left main disease can buy you a CABG. So,
but they're not going to do that like straight from
exactly.
the ER. We still need to
characterize this heart attack for the patient. And, you know, a 12-lead EKG, if they gave you the EKG and you knew where the vessel was or the vessels involved based on that, you would still probably go in, do PCI, do angiography, figure out what vessels were occluded and which ones needed bypass before we jump to the OR and just start plugging in vessels willy-nilly, right?
Yep. All right, cool. Then let's move on. Next question, you're up.
Okay. So we have a 52-year-old man. He comes in for, surprisingly, chest pain. He doesn't have this pain currently. He is a computer engineer and is mostly sedentary. However, with exertion, he develops substernal crushing chest pain that is relieved by rest. He has hypertension and hyperlipidemia. His vitals are afebrile. His heart rate is 76. His blood pressure is 136 over 92. And he's respiring at 16 breaths per minute. There's no tenderness of the chest wall. EKG shows no abnormalities, and chemistries from 3 months ago are normal. What is the best next step? Should we do either no further workup, a stress or an exercise stress EKG, a nuclear stress test, or a left heart catheterization?
Ooh. All right. So this dude has essentially stable angina, correct?
That would be a thought, right?
Okay.
You've got chest pain.
It's better now.
You get it when you're doing stuff, and then it goes away when you take a break.
That's what I'm going with. That's how I'm going to operate here. And by the way, you'll find in clinical practice, if you get somebody who shows up in your ER or triage, if you're an OBGYN, there is nothing better than walking in that room after seeing the chief complaint on the computer and them saying, yeah, but I don't have this now. That is always a better situation. at any rate, this guy with some exertional chest pain, characterized very cardiac-ish with it being substernal and crushing. I'm going to say he's got stable angina, and the next step in management would be an exercise EKG, a stress test.
I like it. Stress test is for the angina patient a perfect choice. So I am going to hold, I'll give you a situation where that's not a good thing.
Okay.
To have the chief complaint no longer present.
Okay.
So say this was our previous patient, has substernal crushing chest pain. They've had it for the past hour. They've come to the ED. They've waited, and now you're seeing them. And now they say, you know, I don't really feel it anymore. They're still feeling tired. You know, you do an EKG. There are ST segment changes. If you've lost the pain sensation, that could mean that you're a little too late to that patient. That's kind of an ominous sign with a heart attack when it starts to get better on its own.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the one example that came to mind when I thought about this.
Good, Good to know.
So yeah, if your heart pain was not treated within time and your heart has had part of it die, it may no longer have any pain.
All right. Well, I'd say cool, now, but that's
not a step two kind of question.
Yeah, that might be a little complicated. Mm-hmm. All right. So,
but here we like the EK or the stress test, right?
Yeah. All right. So, classic triad of angina is substernal chest pain, pain that is provoked by exertion, or I guess you could say relieved by rest or nitrates. But let me say that again. Remember these things for angina: crushing substernal chest pain. The pain is provoked by exertion, and finally, it's relieved by either rest or nitrates.
Perfect.
All right.
So, what about a nuclear stress test here? Why would we not do a nuclear stress test?
Honestly, I don't know. I do know that an exercise stress test is always going to be preferred.
And I think that really comes down to what you know about the patient.
Okay.
Here, you know, so a nuclear stress test, you know, I think it's kind of hard to delineate these two now. But if you were to do an exercise stress test and to see EKG changes with typical angina, like you might have with this patient, you probably don't need a nuclear stress test. Now, if you do the exercise stress test and you don't see those changes, maybe you would get some better characterization by doing a nuclear stress test, but that's a more invasive test. You're giving somebody the like technetium 99 or whatever. They have to do, you know, scans, then they get worked out and then they do more scans. So it's a longer test. It's a more expensive test. And I feel like, you know, if we're going to argue from a practicality standpoint, if we're going to see changes with an exercise stress test, particularly in a sedentary person, we might not need the nuclear stress test, right?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it's hard to argue, though. You know, I think there is a choice to be made, or there a decision to be made by which one you would do. One thing that I want to clarify for people, because this trips me up, a nuclear stress test is not the same thing as a chemical stress test, right?
Yeah.
So when I was kind of trying to delineate these, that was something that was getting me early on, was I was thinking that if you were doing a nuclear stress test, they were going to be giving you something to look at the heart, but they were also going to be giving you chemicals to make your heart go faster. So a nuclear stress test is essentially an exercise stress test plus radioactive isotopes.
Yeah.
It is not.
Hence the name, but I think it's pretty easy to get tripped up on things like that, to fail to make distinctions when you're a medical student and you don't have the intimate knowledge of all the tests that the cardiologists do.
Exactly. Like, I'm well into my third year and I've seen a nuclear stress test. So, and I was like, oh, this is different from a chemical stress test. Right. And I had to really kind of see it to make that delineation, you know?
Yep. All right. So anything else on that? Oh, left heart cath. I think we can eliminate that based on our discussion in the last question, because he essentially has a normal EKG. His pain is currently relieved in the ER, and his vitals are essentially normal except for mild hypertension diastolic.
I don't think we would. That would be... That would kind of be the equivalent of the last question, where we were saying, you know, don't do a CABG on this person just yet.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they need a left heart cath in the future, but that's not where we're going next.
Too big a gun for this patient with angina.
Right.
T Today's music is by DJ Bizo, aka Augustin Beeman. The song is King Jeff and His Apprentice Bart. We'll be featuring more from this young emerging artist who also happens to be my son. I'm just really proud of the creative work he's doing and wanted to support him in his endeavors. So thank you, Augustin. We'll look forward to more of your art, which we'd be happy to feature on the ITB podcast.